Okay, that's my intro. There will be more from that. You see what I'm playing out. Okay, there's an optical illusion called the waterfall illusion, which is the title of a poem that I'm going to read some excerpts from. Excerpts, because reading it the other night, I wasn't sure quite how I'd managed to publish the thing in its entirety. But here we are. The illusion is described within the poem, so I won't tell you it. The waterfall illusion. The virus is spreading like an ink stain underfoot and up the spine. The H silent and inarticulate as clouds in the weft and waft of a fine caravan site in Annan, where we simply hurled our excrement over the hedge to the falls of Foyers, where in 1834 Dr. Adams discovered that if you stared for 20 seconds at a fixed point in the torrent, then transferred his gaze leftwards to the adjacent rocky gully, the gully appeared to shoot skywards. While St. Jerome eats cheese and continues to read assiduously in his study in the house on the lake, although the lake is merely suggested by an expanse of unrippled brass, and the island itself is no bigger than the house that sits upon it. Perhaps I should have said something else. In one of the earlier drafts, there was a brass tap for one of the nipples, a toad in the plug hole. The way her nose scrunches up royalty on the piano, on the patio, the official prunes, just lying in bed and thinking about it. This is the best part. I should like to preface my remarks by declaring a lifelong interest in the meat and livestock industry. The waterfall illusion, the thing itself, the illusion, it reminds me of Kenneth Koch's works in some ways. Together with this quote from John Ashbery, which you probably know, he introduced Koch once and talked about the value of escapism, which Ashbery was so good at. He said, as you listen to him, as you listen to Koch, I think you'll begin to realize that you're escaping to what you should never have been allowed to escape from. So about 30 years ago, I had my sort of first Kenneth Koch experience, and that sense of necessary escape that Ashbery was describing. I was on an Inland Revenue training course in Manchester, closest I've ever been to New York, and I was staring by day into this torrent of double entry bookkeeping, and then by night glancing to one side at Kenneth Koch's The Art of Love, and there was this sort of whoosh, kind of feeling of gravity defying upsurge of elation. So that's my Koch waterfall moments. Here's some more poems that probably won't live up to that upsurge. American Experimental Music is the title of this one. Everything you can think of, all of the time, spread out in the hall. And at the other extreme, I am delighted to see William and Mary in and out of the piano for hours at a time during the breeding season, or pacing gingerly over the mud in a piece called Pacing Gingerly Over the Mud. This next poem is kind of footnote to Kenneth Koch's footnotes to William Carlos Williams. And it's playing with Williams's So Much Depends. It's an N plus 7 Olympian practice game, using a dictionary of ornament, so taking the seventh noun on from the noun that you're replacing in the subject poem. So much depends upon a Regency whiplash curve basket capital, glazed with Raphaelesque water lilies beside the William and Mary style chinoiserie. English breakfast. Containing what, Rudolph Downhill Lemons? Crabapple parquet flooring psychopathology. Mont Blanc, Blancmange. The feathered highlights of Blancmange, a body of work picked up downhill. Picked up in the streets downhill, this much picked up at least. Downhill, the chewed hat with attitude. It's a poem that begins with a suggestion by Bengt af Klintberg, who was one of the Fluxus people, a Swedish creator of various events and happenings. So the first line is his suggestion. When you walk into a forest, don't forget to knock, so that you allow your surroundings to grow into you and over your old home. Five-petaled white, yellow heart, three leaves, barren strawberry. Today I'm feeling a little more accepted by the birds and rocks, this damp cave in the moss. Black plastic in the hawthorn branches is torn like a crow. A blackcap sings whilst rearranging some of its feathers, not wholly concentrating on its song as it pushes up through cracks in the pavement. To wander is the Taoist code word for becoming ecstatic. Purple vetchling curlew rising from the field through fulsome lute playing in the sheepfold, then settling back down again into my Samuel Palmer magic apple tree armchair in the shed for people who work in sheds or shed-like atmospheres. And the poem Tring, which is one of a series of poems where I play around with Gilbert White's natural history, his letters in Selborne. Tring. My little intelligence is confined to the narrow sphere of my own observations at home. Swans turn white the second year and breed the third. Worms work most in spring. Weasels prey on moles. There are two sorts of eels in the island of Ely. Castration has a strange effect. Parrots walk awkwardly. Woodlarks hang poised in the air. Starlings, as it were, swim along. But the people of Tring, Hertfordshire, move in a buoyant manner, as if lighter than air. They seem to want ballast. Finally, a little lament for Kenneth Coke. There's a poem in this, my last book, called Kenneth Coke Uncorked, which is a kind of extreme example of an erasure poem, erasing in this case everything from the first 10 pages of his early long poem, When the Sun Tries to Go On, except erased everything except for his exclamatory apostrophic O's. So there's 10 pages of placed O's. I'm not sure why I did that at the time, but having done it, I enjoyed reading electronically, scrolling through the pages, these O's floating up, kind of effervescing, which was a nice kind of elegy. If I'd been clever, I would have synced things. Anyway, when it comes to performance, rather than me just saying O occasionally and reading the pages, I stole an idea from Tom Raworth, who used to perform elegies to friends of his after they died, by putting their names through a music box. So I punched the O's into the corresponding places on the tapes. I think that's all you need to know. Doesn't sound very Coke-like. It's a little bit more Morton Feldman in a music box. It's quite sparse and tentative. especially if I haven't got it plugged in right. But here we go.
Jeremy, that was lovely. I really liked when you walk into the forest, don't forget to knock, and the music box. Next up, we have Betsy Ford.
Oh, great, I forgot to say.
Brilliant.
Betsy did say, only say that I'm happy to be here, so, you know. She's a poet and an academic. Her written works and sound collages have appeared online and in print, like in Freebird's Journal, Spam Zine, Data Bleed Zine, and Jacket 2. Her chapbook, A Mediated and Partial Zone, is available from Guillemot Press. She's currently based in the glorious Leamington Spa and teaches at the University of Birmingham. Here is Betsy Porritt.
I thought for a second, like, share or something, I needed, like, no introduction. I'm going to begin by reading a poem from the late, great Bernadette Meyer. I'm sure everyone here knows who she was, but if you don't, then you should read the latest edition of the Poetry Project newsletter, which is a great start. But this is from Bernadette, and then I'm going to read some stuff that I'm on a bit of a journey with. So. I have one more of this, but not of this. I don't even know how to tender a room to me. Fires might be smouldering in the old pit of ashes for centuries, then they just ignite. A man comes calling down, a moral baby bleats. I am not. What have I seen? Poem to end, two haloed mourners. Two men conversing in the field. Two old men conversing in the field. Two old men with hats on against the sun. One at a table by the side of the wide garden. One in the front seat of the abandoned car. Door open. The furniture of the field. Me and my sister. Forget it. I'll never write a poem again. It's too much trouble. Put that into meter and make it rhyme. Meanwhile, just love me all the time. I forgot to listen to music. Maybe when I'm dead, I will. Toast pops up. I'm ashamed. What a mess. Bad teeth. There's a snake in the yard. Harmless. Garden variety. Like this poem. I hate it. I won't mention alcohol stimulants and solitude. And that's why people like Shakespeare so much. He never mentioned it, besides burning everything. Leave alone one, leave alone two. Fat colours on the brandished curtain, peak of timidity, not the heat, the humidity. Sleep is only index of phrases. Please don't say your heart is red and confine the flight to something imaginable. In fact, be polite while we all mourn. And invite me to scream with proof along with you, for if you don't, the way you bend your head in that grief and clasp your hands like closed eyes and seem to meet with breath will somehow be less than death's variety. At last, I'm sorry we are done and will not meet again. Thanks, Panda. So here's my stuff. Sutures. I took my shoes off in a classroom as I was teaching. I took my shoes off in a cafe. I took my shoes off in the forest. I took my shoes off as I was driving. I took my shoes off in the Woolworths that is now a Poundland. I took my shoes off and then walked around the European HQ of the Bloomberg building. I took my shoes off in the waiting room while my brother was looking at a coffin. I took my shoes off on a short and dusty gravel path. I took my shoes off in front of El Greco. I took my shoes off in the bakery section of the supermarket, and the booze aisle, and the meat aisle, and the frozen veg aisle, and the checkout area. I took my shoes off on this little patch of grass at the end of my road, and then walked onto the road. I took my shoes off and walked from an old grave to a new grave. I took my shoes off on Margate Sands in March, and in May, and in October. I took my shoes off by the Dead Sea via Petra. I took my shoes off at my nephew's nursery. I took my shoes off in Turin. I took my shoes off in a home for the elderly. Big, round, grief-stricken mackerel sky. One. Weather is there. It happens to us everywhere, terribly. Eventually they land. We path through the sky, air tic-tac bombs, space travel's dirty project, harbored as nautical traces. Good ships bullet the horizons, point zero on the spreading map, inventing new symbols to mean landscape, roadway, direction. There's so much we didn't invent, like leaves in May and gaps in high-banked clouds. Something dropped, a tray shimmers, a massive explosion at the port, expanding concentric circles, songs sung in rounds, verses renew, stopping when the fun stops. Medieval assemblage, body of whatever, I neglect to moisturise my décolletage, and it shows. In orbit, you can still trespass. Atmosphere apes territory. Birds cast as capitals on high columns of air, bearing the kinetic sky on avian shoulder blades. Flat feathers parallel the horizon, which is not as flat as you think it is. Two. Later that summer, or earlier, in the English Riviera, a cleaver, cleaver, clearer version, wavy, wavy, sliver vision. Ever, ever, every error riven, a silver ray is riven, riven. Valley livid, vivid liquid, even, even, never rivered. Given vacant, lively, giver vision. Three. People live in chaotic heritage sites. On the pool for family-friendly larking. Big splash, soft frills. Ugly gull barks, modern leisure, beaching, drying up the route to Wales, curling for potholes in the A38, lay-by refuge sucks up bar stools and butt ends, kissing the tarmac with delicately ribbed fingers spilling over Orangina lips. Four. Voyager, swallower, forever riven, the valley greens right down to the harbour, livid, even vivid river, viral sludge in the wash at the wake, cleaver to an austere English Riviera. Mother waver, this is a no swimming area, saviour. Our heaven is for savers. Avid David uses sharks as blunt instruments, wavy shimmies at the river to eat my sister in her sleep. Velvet dormice halt the rail line, lacking cunning, voted, vetoed, boiling down the argument, favoured, faulty, fever vision, giver bronzy hot pink foil wrappers cut to slivers, those ugly gull cries. Aversion vacant, halving what is needed, halving it again. Seven even seas, something smells good. Savour, savour, 1,000 voracious miles away, shiver, shiver. He'd say, I like children, griever, griever, but I couldn't eat a whole one. Five. When I say creek, what I mean is rut, burdensome old mud, impossibly white egrets, a hairline fracture, unquenchable thirst. The nature I want to write about is what happened to Dad's shoes. What kind of lover is a field? Ground rutted, making railroad rhythms, shiver in swallow dives, between the ungovernable worms and the profitable wheat. Today, I notice Birmingham is estuarine. Greedy longing queries, but what bird wilt thou employ to bring me word of thee? Back on the horse that threw me, Jerome, at the Frick. I know the dirt under his fingernails is paint, but still. A marble in a shell is precarious. Maximum fragility against maximum power. A wheat field against Wall Street. 6. I truly had a dream that Dad was brought up on stage during a musical with all these other men and he started taking his clothes off and fell over and had to be helped up. At the same time, he was standing next to me. What's happening up there? I asked. He said, I asked the man, do you want me to take my clothes off? And he said, yes. But it was as if he couldn't escape his own joke. 7. Here's one. The crop in this field is birdseed. In spring, the thin, clean soil turns to cold, hard green. Carved epiphany, 3 little crowns on 3 little heads, the king awakens, a touch like a lightning bolt. What a way to get your news. Water and grass tells, winds bring us news, invisibly horizons, stacks of unopened voicemails, open voice mails. We read them, we have to. Pioneer bears evil seeds, goose flesh sentences, right hooked by a sharp easterly. Many eyes attend turbulent powers, iconoclasts and files, things shooting out, eyeballs are shaping. Hard to know terror or grief, instead I say I'm emotional. Words are the forest matter, but truly to be living is to be dying. 8. Something for Saturday. Sexless interior of the uncluttered backseat, the fast food hot take reek, Taco Bell backdrop, the red and gold glass window splashing around all that kindergarten-coloured light, ribbed glass ladder sticking straight up to heaven, crushed bluebells cordial the air, turning the boy's face to the sun, his straight gold back, thin soft neck. I hold it like a fetish when I'm pushing it against the sloppy dog's big pink maw, keeled over out back, keened over by none who knew her, couldn't afford the train, can't afford to grieve, can't afford the cuff for the sleeve. They know we've had a long Tory decade. Miraculous transformation is possible. Wine to yolky piss. When the sloppy dog says, wash up on our shores, he's checking the teeth of his magnificent horses. But take body to mean changeable thing, stars and votive candles, bone marrow and resin, tarmac, water, wind, pulpy biome fizzing away, reactivated seeds, the sleeper cells, miracles, history, invasions, the statue walks and weeps and bleeds. 9. Harborer. On a nothingy day, I'm watching leaf buds for you. In all this talk about particles, we forgot to agree on the sign. As I was talking to a blind lady, I took off my shoes in the car park of the Ritz. I took off my shoes in a rescue centre for animals. I took my shoes off in a farmyard in Devon. I took my shoes off on the bus and the train and the small open-top ferry. I took my shoes off on the Offersdyke footpath and set my toes in Wales and my heels in England. I took my shoes off on the London Road and set my toes to Dover. I took my shoes off in a cultural studies department that is now a suite of hireable rooms. I took my shoes off in the house of an enemy. I took my shoes off in a 20p public toilet and then walked to the house of an enemy. I took my shoes off in an Anglican cathedral. I took my shoes off in Spain next to the grave of Franco. I took my shoes off on a plush rug at Graceland. I took my shoes off and stepped on a fossil. I took my shoes off and put my toes in water. I put my toes on a hand, on a back, in the crook of a neck. I took my shoes off and rubbed salt in the soles of my feet. I took my shoes off, walked over, and touched my toes to those blue-black tiles. Thanks.
Thank you, Betsy. I loved that. Next up, you'll have Rona. Rona Cran is an associate professor of 20th century American literature at the University of Birmingham and the co-founder of the Network of New York School Studies. They are the author of Collage and 20th Century Art, Literature and Culture, and the creator of the British Academy-funded digital humanities resource, MakeYourOwnBrainArt.com, which is dedicated to the collages of the New York School poet and artist Joe Brainard. Their next book is entitled Everyday Rebellion, Poetics of Resistance in the New York City. They are also editing an oral history of the New York School, which will be published by the Edinburgh University Press. Their first poetry collection, I Remember Kim, will be published by the Verve Poetry Press this summer. Moreover, Rona's also helped me find my own voice for writing essays when they encouraged me to write about Bernadette Mayer, so it was really nice to hear that from Betsy. And they have introduced me to my favourite writers like Frank O'Hara, Joe Brainard, John Ashbery, and beautiful songs like Anything Goes by Ella Fitzgerald and Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters. And they also said in one of my first lectures with them that poems are like people. We need to dance a bit with poems in order to understand them. And I don't think I've found a better way to put our interactions with poems into words. So before I further delay, here's the lovely Rona Cran.
Thanks, Amik. Amik's a fantastic student of mine. So really thrilled to have Amik here. This is something really new to me, so poets don't really know how you do it, it's quite scary. I'm just going to read a little bit from this book of mine that's coming out later this year, a little bit from the preface and then a little bit from some bits towards the end. So this is from the preface. You cannot sit motionless in the heart of these perils because the boat is rocking like a cradle and you are pitched one way and the other without the slightest warning. Herman Melville. On October 18th, 2021, my little sister Kim died suddenly at night from complications relating to type 1 diabetes, complications that I still don't quite understand. She was 32. So I wrote this small book in an attempt to give shape to the experience of that. And as you will recognize, I borrow its form from Joe Brainard. This is my I Remember. There have been others, Georges Perec, Margot Glantz, Dennis Herson, Leanne Brown has a fantastic little one too. And at its heart, I Remember Kim is what its title suggests. It's a memoir about my sister. And it's also a collage in all kinds of ways. It's also, to borrow from the subtitle of David Wojnarowicz's memoir, Close to the Knives, a memoir of disintegration. It's about the dissolution that I felt in the days and weeks and months following her death, and it's kind of embodied or enacted in this fragmented and kind of relentless form. And also in the fact that it doesn't know if it's a poem or a memoir or a letter or something else. Marita Sterkin writes, memory establishes life's continuity. It gives meaning to the present as each moment is constituted by the past. And Kim's death altered all my memories, a constant in my life. I now feel her absence, even in recollecting moments or events where she wasn't present. And as Brad Gooch writes, I'm not nostalgic, just shocked. I wrote it piecemeal, by hand, in a notebook given to me by a friend over many months on many train journeys, sticking more or less to Joe Brainard's method in order to overcome my inability to concentrate for long periods of time, and also my sense of having lost control, no one to witness and adjust, no one to drive the car, to quote William Carlos Williams, as well as to kind of navigate what felt like a catastrophic failure of language in the context of this event. So here are some bits from it, things that I kind of remembered but also made up. For context, Kim was a scuba diving instructor who lived in Panama. I remember that St. Brendan of Clonfert is the patron saint of divers, sailors, adventurers, travellers, and whales. I remember that diving is a poetic act, pivoting on creativity and control. I remember that some fish move like birds in murmurations. I remember the breath taken, the ascent. I remember the weight of emptiness. I remember transferring some of your ashes and some sand from Cuiba, still wet, into the little glass bottle that Michelle had given me, decorated with shells and a turtle. I remember that I carried some of your ashes home with me in a small Chanel makeup bag. I remember that the ocean is not empty. I remember that there is no horizon underwater. I remember that you used to swim at a Lido somewhere in North London, but I can't remember where. I remember feeling messy, untethered, and going for a swim in the Hackney Reservoir. I remember that the nearest tube station to the reservoir is Manor House, near where you used to live. I remember meeting you there, the station with many exits filled with garbage and a hot wind, and then walking down green lanes. I retraced our steps and immersed myself in the cold brown water. I remember, how lost can you be when everywhere you turn it's morning and the sun's coming up? Bernadette Mayer. I remember thoughts that do often lie too deep for tears. William Wordsworth. I remember that it's 5 nights now that I've dreamed dreams shaped by your death. I remember the dream in which you weren't dead after all. I remember, let us then be up and doing with a heart for any fate. Longfellow. I remember, he is not here but far away. The noise of life begins again, and ghastly through the drizzling rain, on the bald streets breaks the blank day. Tennyson. I remember, but grief is darker. It is a wig that does not rest gently on my head. Essex Hemphill. I remember there are cracks in all directions. I remember I want someone else to die, not someone close to me, someone close to someone else. I remember the longer the life, the more lives are accumulated. Edmund Berrigan. I remember how much you loved Rafa Nadal, how we always cheered his wins together and felt sad about his losses, how much I wanted to tell you about his win in Melbourne. I remember it felt as though her problems were on the surface of the earth again, not down in its molten core. Ya Gyasi. I remember the infinite failures of language. I remember the seeing hands of others. Frank O'Hara. I remember I push it around trying to make it say what I want it to say. Mark Bibby. I remember you were born in a December and died in an October. I remember I wonder what it felt like to die. I remember there are days when everything feels like a metaphor for your having died. There are days when nothing does. Mark Bibby. I remember we must live each moment to the full because you can't. I remember easier said than done. I remember how much I hate the language of grief, getting over, moving on, going through. I remember you must speak not only of great devastation, Ilya Kaminsky. I remember I am not death. I simply told the world to shut off its crazy noise for a while, Ilya Kaminsky. I remember meeting or encountering other bereaved. I remember you and me reading on our beds all day. I remember when you were about 11, what you wanted more than anything was a valance around your bed. I remember what is unique to me, what I feel is unique to me because I only knew you in the way that I only knew you. I remember, Frank O'Hara, you do not always know what I am feeling. I remember choosing between two numbered bamboo toothbrushes, 4 and 5. I choose 5 because we're a family of 5. Then I remember, are we? Should I have chosen 4? I stick with 5. I remember a letter arriving for you 16 weeks after your desk, after your death, reminding you to book a smear test. I remember thinking at least you'll never have to go through that again and hearing you laugh. I remember Wake Up and Live, Langston Hughes. I remember as a condition of being, as a kind of meaning, as a direction taken, Nick Cave. I remember I don't want to leave a messy corpse, Jericho Brown. I bet your corpse was beautifully unmessy and beautifully beautiful. I bet you looked hot, even in death. I remember memory is a reflection of self, Sarah Shulman. I remember our disappeared friends have taken our fear with them, Sarah Shulman. I remember there is no marker, just our hearts. We know where he is, Jill Kelleran. I remember thinking about the moments that won't happen is hard too, Herbert Muschamp. I remember everything you won't ever do. I remember the heat and confusion of living, which is the only answer to death, Audre Lorde. I remember that it's been 16 weeks, then 17, then 20, then when a dear friend announces her pregnancy, an eerie 24. I remember the anger too, how dare they die and leave us alone to deal with all this shit, with no one to complain to, Herbert Muschamp. I remember Sasha's place, a bench in Victoria Park with a plaque on it that reads, "All welcome, rest, be easy, you are safe, love lives here." I remember John Ashbery, "The story blows away, and what can you do, howling without a script?" I remember how much of this I've remembered and written whilst on tube journeys to see friends. I remember almost everyone will experience grief, that those of us who do are the lucky ones, to have loved, to continue to live. I remember that the pandemic has bereaved the world, that I am just one of a number. I remember the bodies I've seen, the man on the Nakuru Highway in Lynette hit by a car, Nonna in her lovely makeup and funeral regalia, Aki, the brown cat, cruelly dead under the bridge in the pre-dawn drizzle. I did not see your body, though I tried to imagine what it, you, looked like all the time. I wonder what your last moments were like. I remember imagining you watching the drama of your death unfold. I can't imagine you simply disappearing. I remember how could he be so present one moment and altogether gone the next? How could a life so strong be simply annihilated? David Gear. I remember, it's not uncommon, but the dead are frequently unable to accept their condition. They resemble the living in that respect, but they have forgotten what they're nostalgic for. Much is lost in the crossing over. Damon Galgut. I remember, will I meet your ghost? I remember that I keep a handful of your ashes as a talisman of memory and good luck. I remember, they existed, we can be. Maya Angelou. Thanks.
That was beautiful. Next up we have Peter Robinson. Peter Robinson is a professor of English and American Literature at the University of Reading and poetry editor for Two Rivers Press and the Folk Nightly Review, the author of Aphorisms, a collection of stories, two novels and various volumes of literary criticism. He has been awarded the Cheltenham Prize and the John Florio Prize, as well as two Poetry Book Society recommendations for some of his collections of poetry and translations. His collected poems was published by Scherzman Books in 2017, and the same firm has recently released The Personal Art, Essays, Reviews and Memoirs, Reports After the Fire, Selected Poems of DiMarchi, and a collection of essays titled Peter Robinson, a Portrait of His Work, edited by Tom Phillips. His most recent collection of poetry is Retrieved Attachments, published by Two Rivers Press in February this year. Moreover, this autumn in the USA, Mad Hat Press will bring out Return to Sendai, New and Selected Poems, and Agincourt Press will publish the collected poems of Giorgio Bassani. Here's Peter Robinson.
Thank you very much. I thought I'd read a few poems connected with paintings one way or another as a tribute to a school of poetry that was so interested in the school of painters. And the first one is called At the Institute, after Charles Sheeler. It's from November 2006. At the Institute, after Charles Sheeler. He was touching the hard edge where life and art met. I was gazing at precisionist cityscapes and furniture. And just so's I wouldn't forget, there in a stillness like peace and silence, secured at some price, Mr. President himself was defending his own legacy, his bloody adventure. He was staying the course. He would get the job done. A refurbishment worker's too loud radio come thoughtlessly from an adjacent room. And just so's I wouldn't forget, there the artist looks at nature, was a painter in his studio, touching the hard edge where life and art met. And here's one nearer to home in the National Gallery here. This is called Laurie Park Avenue by Camille Pizarro, 1871. Wisps of white cloud in a pale turquoise sky, Pizarro painted out of doors, and a church spire, its creamy stone, two or three passers-by. He painted out one female figure. Her pentimenti could be seen still on the gravel, advancing towards me as a darker stain. Sydenham, in an early springtime, just over a century after, not far from the hospice where she worked, I could imagine finding us on that avenue again. Then here, as warmth has come at least, there are things to do with the past, like droplets on those steady leaves, her Solomon's seal after rain, and down by more leafage-filled gardens, the flimsy petal, purple-hearted poppies bring home illusions of another life's occluded possibilities. With foxglove, iris, the night-scented stock, everything that didn't happen, disappointed, went awry, is back as if making a mockery of how it was or why. But lacking such things to do with the past, like this figure he had painted out, who fills the air with an indelible stain, there'd be no possibilities. They thicken into leaf, his flanking trees. Look now, it's as plain as plain. And here's a little one which just is the title poem, actually, to this book. It just has an allusion to an English post-impressionist. This is called Buried Music. Buried music from a life, like quoting Rilke at the Co-op. Come out with paddlers in the shallows, their reflection reminiscent of a Philip Wilson steer. While the rib boats harbouring, silhouette its last light air, are being dragged back up their slipway. It accepts those local stones in the graveyard near the long-stay car park here, a seaside town where I could catch its tones, attuned to all the shingle pebbles moved by a turning tide. And here's one... Here's one set in the campus at UEA. It's written in three little sections, each one named after a work of art by Alberto Giacometti. And it's called Drawing a Line. Walking Man, 1950. Resilient squirrel with your dropped takeaway on a Dennis Lasden precipice. There's no need to freeze, though fazed by this, because entranced, I'll let you be, me moving over a glass-sided walkway like some ad hoc Giacometti, attenuated, kneaded sculpture piece, striding through the day. Still Life, 1949. Forgive me, Café au lait coloured pigeon, still as you like on a grey concrete wall. You rabbits, at your breakfasting off these central reservations, because we're located here in framed spaces as if one of his much-hatched sketches on which each figure's found its own ground and outline in the phased approximations. The Tree, 1949. But wind through the tree, forgive me my dismay, I only heard you sighing as eyes closed on broad water's edges and strollers cooled their feet from landing stages. Then here was danger, ground suddenly shelving on a glorious day, as that architect called it, when warm, uninterrupted sunshine would draw such creatures from their habitats and home. And here's one. A few years ago, I wrote a suite of poems inspired by the paintings of David Inshaw, who I was lucky enough to meet when I was 24 and still trying to paint myself. And it came out in this lovely edition with the coloured, with the paintings in colour. And here's one called At Slater's Yard. Slater's Yard is a gallery in West Bay in Dorset. This is my why I am like a painter. And it refers to a couple of 19th century social Darwinists, Nordau and Lombroso, who, as well as all of their theories about degeneration and so on, had an idea that there was a kind of artistic type, sort of head in the clouds, artistic type. At Slater's Yard. There's a corrugated iron roof, its undulations flattened by settled years of lime green moss. It juts into repurposed space where stone wall textures are revealed, enhanced by sparser finishes. Framed pictures hung against it. A dusk cloud risen behind its hill, the portrait of one tree in moonlight, another strafing seagull. They emphasize the edges, letting on bare sail loft opposite, a dried grey wood interior where all the thrifty meanings start. Then me too, I'm a counter of clouds, come over the hills like this one, salmoning in a deepening blue. They fill up turning windscreen glass. You see, I've put the car in too. Above West Bay's horizon, with a borrowed sharpness, focus from promptings given by that pink house under its precipitous cliff. Recounting them, you're at least alive to how this word cloud builds and disperses ideas like a Nordau's or Lombroso's, and how they're clouds themselves, these verses. And I'll finish off with a couple from this new book called Retrieved Attachments, titled partly prompted, of course, by that posthumous collection of Frank O'Hara's that has one of those words in it. Here's a poem inspired by a Japanese painter that I came across in my 14 years living in Sendai, where in the Miyagi Art Museum there are a number of pictures by Shunsuke Matsumoto, who died young just after the Second World War from TB and was stone deaf most of his life from a childhood illness. And he painted in a bit like Nicholas de Stael, in a kind of semi-abstract, semi-representational style, using a palette knife. And this poem called Street Scene is inspired by his street scene in Yokohama, which I think was painted in 1941. Street Scene, after Shunsuke Matsumoto. This scuffed, wind-ruffled crossroads with a rickshaw and Canadian Pacific offices is what inspired my corner store when driving home one frozen night. We came upon a retail outlet surviving between two corporate finance high-rise blocks in the business district. Up ahead, its shopfront window faintly glowed. Dispensing machines stood arrayed outside. It was like a fridge door left ajar. Not one vehicle anywhere in sight would cross the intersection as we stayed there, stationary at our stoplight. With a shiver, it all comes back to mind, his street scene where we might have been queuing outside to begin ghost lives, our current ones gone awry, those minutes or long years before, when stranded there came Grandad's wished for emigration to that farther shore. And finally, a poem that I think is, hope it's self-explanatory, except that it's written about the town where my wife comes from, in Italy, and a place we couldn't visit for 2 years, of course, because of the pandemic. It's called Via de Chirico. There on the front of a number 8 bus in Via Venezia, coming towards us, that metaphysical destination gives me a shiver, a start, and I ask you, where is Via de Chirico, supposing it's somewhere on the far side of town? But as it veers left at the lights to Via Trento, you're coming back with, I don't know, intrigued by enigmatic directions now as the bus trundles on through a luminous dusk for the station. I can imagine it, though, in the spirit of that structure's saved facade, caught by honey-coloured sunlight, when, however warm pale stone, the frontage resembles a hollowed-out shell, a charm against split-level extension, while day has grown theatrical, staging encounters with gloves, fruit, biscuits, as mannequins from the lit shop windows point at Garibaldi in his square, and the same bus diminishes towards a curtain wall where dusk light shining up behind it promises a late, postponed arrival. It conjures a three-quarter moon above Parma in pink-tinged sky the pantograph strike through, then more masked figures at a distance, goods train wagons disappearing down tracks raised over roofs in the town. And as they do, the fact of things confirms your residence here among them. The school kids biking home by way of such small factory remnants as lengthening shadows sharpen, redefine, and our metaphysical destination. It looms from this end of the number 8 bus line. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. That was great. Thanks to Jeremy, Betsy, Rona, and Peter for the lovely readings. And thank you to all of you for being with us. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day.